ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. This is Canto 10, Chapter Number 5, entitled The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva. We'll begin with text number 9, in which there's no purport. Then we can also recite text number 10 and maybe text number 11. We'll see. So please repeat.
Gopyaha cha akarnya mudita yashodayaha suta udbhavam atmanam bhushayam chakruho vastra akalpa anjana adibhihi gopyascha karnya mudita यशोदायासुतोद्भवम् आत्मानं भूषयाम चक्रुः वस्त्राकल्पाञ्जनादिभिः गोप्यश्चाकर्ण्यमुदिता यशोदायासुतोद्भवम् आत्मानं भूषयाम चक्रुः वस्त्राकल्पाञ्जनादिभिः गोप्यश्चाकर्ण्यमुदिता यशोदायासुतोद्भवम् आत्मानं भूषयाम चक्रुः वस्त्राकल्पाञ्जनादिभिः.
Ladies, Gopyah.
The feminine community.
The wives of the cowherd men.
Cha.
Also.
Akarnya.
After hearing.
Muditaha.
Became very glad.
Yashodayaha.
Of Mother Yashoda.
Suta Udbhavam.
The birth of a male child.
Atmanam.
Personally.
Bhushayam Chakruho.
Bhushayam Chakruho. Dressed very nicely. To attend the festival.
Vastra akalpa anjana adibhihi.
With proper dress. Ornaments. Black ointment. And so on. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The gopi wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a son, and they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes, and so on. There's no purport, so we'll go on to text number 10, which I will recite.
Nava kumkuma kinjalka mukha pankaja bhutayaha badibhis twaritam jagmuho pratushmanyas chalat kochaha.
Their lotus-like faces, extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkuma, the wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. Why don't we repeat this also? Their lotus-like faces, extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkuma, the wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The cowherd men and women in the villages lived a very natural life, and the women developed a natural feminine beauty with full hips and breasts. Because women in modern civilization do not live naturally, their hips and breasts do not develop this natural fullness. Because of artificial living, women have lost their natural beauty, although they claim to be independent and advanced in material civilization. This description of the village women gives a clear example of the contrast between natural life and the artificial life of a condemned society, such as that of the Western countries, where topless, bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops and for public advertisements. The word balibhihi indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice clothes, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called bali. The words twaritam jagmuhu indicate how happy the village women were to understand that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a wonderful child known as Krishna. Om Agnanatimirantasya Gnananjana Shilakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dalati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yudaparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Gopyaschakarnya Murita Yashodayasutod Bhavam Atmanam Bhushayam Chakrur Vastrakalpanjanadivhihi Navakunkuma Kinjalka Mukhapanka Jambhutayaha Balibhistwaritam Jagmuhu Prithu Shronyas Chadat Kochaha. The gopi wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a son, and they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes, and so on. Their lotus-like faces, extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkuma, the wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. We can see a contrast here, a marked contrast between the reaction of the Vrijavasi women, here called gopis, the gopis of elderly gopis of Vrindavan, and the co-wives of, well, Maharaj Chitraketu's many, many wives in the sixth canto. In Vrindavan, we've been studying the narration of Chitraketu Maharaj, who didn't have a son. Finally, he gave birth to a son after many, many years, even though he had how many wives? 10 million wives. That's a handful. So 10 million wives, but they couldn't produce even one son. Somehow or other, by fate, he got a son, but the son's name was? Harshashoka, which means happiness and distress. So we're not quite at the distress yet, but when this son was born, everyone was happy, except for whom? The other 9,999,000 wives. They were envious. So envious that they did what? They poisoned the child. Sometimes we see in this world it's like this. I was once living in a place, and one mother had a very beautiful child, and then the other one became very envious. This is the nature of this world that we live in. So until we work this out, until we get over this attitude problem, ego problem, envy problem that we have, vis-a-vis the Supreme Personality of Godhead and therefore necessarily represented in our dealings with all others in one way or another. We have to keep taking birth in this kind of environment, and sometimes we have to take birth as a child who gets poisoned, or a cow who is killed, or someone whose fate is so frustrated that no matter what, you cannot attain what you want. So this is the world of envy. We created this world. We are maintaining this world by our dogged determination. That's called Asha Bandha by Srila Rupa Goswami. Hope against hope. Just like, who's the favorite example of a person who is hell-bent, we can say, on attaining his desires, no matter what the odds are stacked against him? Jarasandha. How many times did Jarasandha attack Mathura? 17 times, and he still didn't give up hope. Similarly, Shankaracharya says about ourselves in this material world. He says that the day comes, the night comes. The winter season comes, the summer season comes. Time plays, life departs. Tadapidya munchati ashavayu. Still, despite seeing all this, despite experiencing all this, we don't give up our bundle of hopes. Life after life, we carry it with us from one material tabernacle to another one. And we have to undergo this harsha shoka, just like Chitraketu Maharaj. Now, Prabhupada, we haven't got there yet, but in the next verse, which we may or may not read, he's quoting Brahma Samhita. Well, let's just go ahead and read it. Gopya smrishta mani kundala nishka kanthyash chitrambaraha patishikhat yutamalya varshaha nandalayam savalaya vrajatir virejur vyalola kundala payodhara kara shobhaha. In the ears of the gopis were brilliantly polished jeweled earrings, and from their necks hung metal lockets. Their hands were decorated with bangles. Their dresses were of varied colors. And from their hair, flowers fell onto the street like showers. Thus, while going to the house of Maharaj Nanda, the gopis, their earrings, breasts, and garlands moving, were brilliantly beautiful. Purport. The description of the gopis who were going to the house of Maharaj Nanda to welcome Krishna is especially significant. The gopis were not ordinary women, but expansions of Krishna's pleasure potency as described in the Brahma Samhita. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita bhista bhirya eva nijarupataya kalabhihi goloka eva nivasatya khilatmu bhuto govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami chintamani prakarasat mazukalpa riksha lakshavriteshu surabhiradhipalayantam lakshmi sahasrashata sambhrama sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Krishna is always worshipped by the gopis wherever he goes. Therefore, Krishna is so vividly described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also described Krishna in this way. Ramya kachit upasana vrajavadhu varkena yakalpita. All these gopis were going to offer Krishna their presentations because the gopis are eternal associates of the Lord. Now the gopis were more jubilant because of the news of Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan. There are a couple of levels here. First of all, we're contrasting the envious so-called happiness of the material world, temporary happiness of the material world, with the eternal happiness beyond envy, the absolutely pure, pristine, spiritual happiness of the gopis. And who are these gopis? Srila Prabhupada has told us. They're expansions of Krishna's own pleasure potency. His own antaranga shakti, his internal energy, His internal energy is chiefly manifest in the personality of Srimati Radharani, but she herself expands in all these different forms that are described here, the different gopis. They all represent some degree of Srimati Radharani's natural beauty and her natural inclination to serve the Lord. So on one level, the gopis are very happy because they're going to see Krishna. Krishna has finally appeared and they are Krishna's eternal parts and parcels. How could they not be happy? But on another level, we can say, maybe even a higher level, they're genuinely happy because they're not envious. They're genuinely happy that Mother Yashoda has been given this great fortune, that she has the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her son. Therefore, and later on in this canto, he asks this question, who can be more fortunate than the wife of Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda? So, the gopis are very happy. They're not envious of Yashoda. They're quite happy. And as a natural extension of their pleasing service attitude, they're running. Twaritam Jagmuhu means they're very quickly going to the house of Mother Yashoda. So that brings us to the next topic. Atmanam Bhushayam Chakrur Vastra Kalpanjanadibhi Navakunkama Kinjalka Mukha Pankaja Bhuti. This natural beauty of the gopis has been described. Actually, throughout this passage here, we see so many apparently mundane things are being described. We heard yesterday. Why are we concerned about the fact that they're wearing valuable garments? Why are we concerned that they're decorated with gold ornaments? Srila Prabhupada indicates, although there's no purport in text 9, his translation takes some liberty and says, they decorated themselves very nicely with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes, and so on. It's proper to manifest the natural beauty of the Lord's creation. It's proper to dress in a certain way. It's proper to decorate oneself in a certain way. These things are proper. And what are some of the examples given here? These things have been going on since time immemorial, actually. The way that we dress, the way that we decorate ourselves with tilak and other auspicious markings, these things are going on for a long, long time. How long? Who can say? Huh? Since time immemorial. There's an innate conservatism in Vedic culture. It's built in. It's a natural characteristic. You can say a sarup lakshana, an innate characteristic. How does it manifest? When I was in college, they taught me that in the Punjab Valley in North India, they have found archaeological digs in which there are what we call in Hindi, churiyan, these glass bangles, colored glass bangles that women still wear in India today. They have found shards of these glass bangles from 3,000 years ago. They have found talis, kotoris, the things that we still eat from that date. That's called cultural continuity. It's going on for a long, long time because it's understood these things are actually eternal. These things actually represent the eternal culture. Yesterday we heard about spiritual life means a particular culture, specific culture. Impersonal spiritual life is divorced from a specific culture. But personal spiritual life is necessarily tied up in that personal culture. And it's going on for a long time. It's called Sanatan Dharma. Actually, in his Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Srila Sanatan Goswami has commented that that culture is manifest in its zenith, we can say, in medieval North Central India. In that culture, which is what we're talking about. So what's another thing? Nava kumkumar kinjalka. Kumkuma means this red sindur that we women still use. Those who are chaste, they decorate the part of their hair. what's it called? Sintur, or Simanta. This is called, the middle part of the hair is called Simanta. Nowadays, women don't necessarily part their hair like that. They certainly don't put kumkum in it. Sometimes women don't even have hair. Sometimes, like Sinead O'Connor, they shave their head. So this is an artificial idea of beauty that Prabhupada discusses in the purport. But kumkuma means this red powder, vermilion. Kinjalka. Anybody here from Andhra Pradesh or Telangana? No. Anyway, they call it Jawadhu. And women are still using this. It's the powder that you get from the inside of a lotus flower. And it has a very beautiful, subtle scent. It's considered a perfume. And you can still buy it, at least in South India. It's still available on the market because not all women have sold out to the artificial idea of beauty that's been imported by people with dubious motives. Sometimes it's said that the first stage in neo-imperialistic, multinational corporate exploitation or domination of the world is cultural homogenization. It's necessary to homogenize everyone culturally in order to exploit them. It's a basic principle of rampant capitalism for which America is famous, that you have to artificially create a certain need and then step in to fulfill that need and in this way exploit everyone through this kind of domination. So, therefore, these things are being discouraged. Or yesterday we heard, Prabhupada told us, when we consider the past condition of the agriculturalist in the village, we can see how opulent he was simply because of agricultural production and protection of cows. Simply because of what? Agricultural production and protection of cows. Krishi Gorakshya. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and is dressed in niggardly, torn cloth. They're not only suffering pitiably, what are they doing to themselves? Anybody who knows the situation in modern India? Mass suicide. They're killing themselves because they see no way out of this. There's no way to fight this big monster that's coming and taking land that they have cultivated for as many years as women have been wearing churiyan. That has been in one family for that long. And because the government is paid off by the conglomerates who want to build up their economic sectors, it's happening in Gurgaon, just near Vrindavan. As a matter of fact, now they're building a big expressway, metro line, all the way from Delhi to Agra. Going to go through Vrindavan. That makes it easier to get to Vrindavan, but it makes it easier for all the wrong things to get into Vrindavan also. And I've seen this. I left Vrindavan to take care of my elderly mother in 2006. And when I came back in 2011, everything was different. High-rise apartments, young boys and girls associating freely, wearing blue jeans and Playboy t-shirts and smoking, and so many things in Vrindavan. When we go to Vrindavan, sometimes we think it's just a one-way exchange. We're getting purified, but we don't realize what kind of impact are we making. That's why those high-rise apartments are there, after all. So, the farmers are killing themselves because their land is being stolen by big business, which is the new superpower. So, TCC, one scholar in Santa Barbara calls it the transnational corporate class. That is the new superpower, he says. Anybody knows that you just look at the modern election in the United States and you can understand that neither one of the major candidates has any real patriotic, nothing genuine there. They're both cheaters, rascals, insane, actually. So, the nation-state paradigm is a has-been paradigm. It's actually, it's all about money, and really money is all about what? Sense gratification, including subtle sense gratification such as profit, adoration, distinction, prestige. If you live in India long enough, you understand the value of prestige and the worth of money with regard to prestige. Anyway, so Nava Kumkana Kinjalka Mukha Pankaja Bhuti. Mukha Pankaja Bhuti. Their faces were like lotus flowers. And that their faces were the manifestation of their opulence. Bhuti. We have the word vibhuti in Bhagavad Gita, means the opulences of the Lord. So this is their bhuti, is their beauty. So, and natural beauty. This is what Prabhupada is saying also. Natural beauty. Not the topless, bottomless beauty that is sold cheaply in clubs and shops and public advertisements. When I was in India some time ago, I saw there was a billboard, and the billboard was advertising chocolate, because in India now they've got this craze for chocolate, just like they've also got the craze for Valentine's Day. It's a huge thing now in India. So they're in the midst of the same kind of sexual revolution that went on in the United States about 50 years ago, or 50 years ago or so. Anyway, so the billboard showed this one young woman, very pretty young Indian woman, and she was completely naked, but you couldn't really tell for sure, because she was also completely covered in wet chocolate. That was the billboard. So this kind of artificial beauty is exactly what Prabhupada is talking about. So this is not the beauty of the gopis. This is the beauty of a highly misdirected, highly artificial, highly doomed civilization. What does it mean when we say that civilization is doomed? Does it mean that the whole thing is going to become crashing down? Or does it rather mean that in slow increments you gradually forfeit more and more and more of your humanity? That's something to think about. Okay. So then we come to the next point, the word balidhi. Prabhupada says here, it indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice cloths, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called bali. Bali. This is an old, old word that means exactly this kind of thing. Sometimes you see, even still, among traditional people in India, they have these little brass baskets. They come to the temple and they're filled with flowers and auspicious incense and other such things. Fused rice, that's called akshata. Sometimes it's raw rice, rather. It's put into kumkum or into sindoor. Auspicious, these are considered auspicious things since time immemorial. And this is what the gopis were very happily carrying to the house of Mother Yashoda in order to present as gestures of their goodwill and genuine love for the son of Mother Yashoda who has just appeared. This is the description of the first Janmashtami festival. We just celebrated Janmashtami recently. So Twaritam Jagmuhu, they were so happy, they were moving very fast. And then it says, the ears of the gopis were brilliantly polished jeweled earrings. From their necks hung metal lockets. Their hands were decorated with bangles. We've already described that. Their dresses were of varied colors, and from their hair, flowers fell onto the street like showers. Flowers. We still get flowers in India. America has become the standard of beauty, and the standard of life in America has become so artificial that it's very difficult to get flowers in America. They're very expensive. Flowers are still valued in India, and they're still fairly easily available, especially in South India. Everywhere you go in South India, you smell jasmine. Why? Because practically every woman in South India decorates her hair with jasmine flowers. So this is the standard of beauty that was manifest even in Gokula, Vrindavan, the spiritual world of Krishna's pastimes, Bhoma Vrindavan, 5,000 years ago. There were so many flowers that they fell onto the street like showers. Thus, while going to the house of Maharaj Nanda, the gopis, their earrings, breasts, and garlands moving were brilliantly beautiful. This is also described elsewhere, and later on, a few chapters in the fast forwarded, a few chapters, with regards to which gopi in particular? Anybody know? Damodar Leela? Yashoda. There's a very famous verse in which her feminine beauty is described in very similar ways. It's very much appreciated that her earrings are shaking, her bangles are shaking, her breasts are shaking, her hips are shaking, the flowers are falling from her hair. Exactly the same thing. What was she doing? She was churning butter. This is described as well. All the inauspiciousness in all 10 directions is dissipated by the sound of the gopis singing songs while they churn butter. When you churn butter, we don't know this because we don't churn butter. We go to Trader Joe's and we buy so-called butter. We don't really know what it is. Especially in India, you don't know what it is, but they call it butter. But real butter means you put milk in this churn, you get the churning rod, and you churn it. Then you know for sure. Gopi Paranadana Prabhu told me, the only way you know for sure that you're getting good milk in India is you keep your own cow and you milk your own cow. And he did this. Because otherwise, it's been my personal experience, we find a nice dudhwala and he comes and he's got nice milk and he's giving it for a good price. But hote hote, gradually, we find that the milk is becoming a little funny and the price is going up. Because it's being diluted or it's being added something or who knows what they're doing. And they'll do anything. It's a fact. They will do anything for money there. So, anyway, I've lost my train of thought now. But this is natural beauty. This is natural culture. This is eternal beauty, eternal culture, because it's based on the eternal attitude of love of Godhead. Service. Without love, you cannot motivate anybody to do anything. Law is an artificial attempt to duplicate the force of love. But it usually doesn't work because it's artificial. So we're living in an artificial world, this material world, that's based on something other than love of God. It's based on the idea of competing with God, trying to exploit his things. Sometimes we even try to exploit him personally when we become sahajiyas. That's like a subset of the karma principle. And in the Gyan world, what are we trying to do? We're trying to evade Krishna's authority. We're trying to avoid the reactions that we ourselves have created, the seeds that we ourselves have planted. We're trying to avoid eating those grains. You see? So karma and gyan in this material world cannot duplicate the kind of spontaneous, natural, beautiful love that we see manifested by the gopis especially. And here in Nanda Gokula, the elder gopis are being described here. This is the doorway to the Bal Leelas that are described, Lord Krishna's childhood pastimes here in the 10th canto. And it's being introduced very poetically, very beautifully by Srila Prabhupada in his wonderful purports. But he reminds us towards the end of his purport that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described this situation. Ramya kachirupasana vrajavadhu varkena ya kalpita. Anybody know this verse? This is the first verse, the opening verse of the commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam written by Srinath Chakravarti. Srinath Chakravarti was closely related to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it's a very famous verse that actually encapsulates the entire Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. He says, Aradhyo Bhagavan Varjeshatanayas Taddhama Vrindavanam. The supremely worshipable personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, and Vrindavan is his eternal abode. Ramya Kachir Upasana Vrajavadhu Vargena Yakalpita. The mode of worship that is topmost was that conceived by the gopis of Vrindavan. It is also the most appreciable service that one can render to the Lord, Gopi Bhava. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumartho Mahan. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme evidence Or in some readings it says, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam. It's the spotless Purana. Either way, it's valid. Srimad Bhagavatam is what reveals these things to us. This is what we're studying this morning, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhur Matamidam Tatradaro Nahparaha. These are the conclusions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for which we have all respect. And there's nothing higher than this. This is the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy in a nutshell. So these are beautiful, beautiful descriptions of the spontaneous, natural, beautiful love of the Brijavasis, especially the gopis. We're all following the gopis, actually. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has told us that the natural fruition of mature chanting of the Kama Gayatri. Kama Gayatri, those who are twice initiated, they know it's the last Gayatri mantra that we chant. The natural fruition of that mantra is to take birth as a female. Women will be happy to hear this. But we don't believe in equal rights. We believe that women are actually superior to men. That's why we worship and try to emulate them. To be cursed with the Purusha Abhiman, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, male ego, is like a ball and chain that binds us to this artificial world of artificial, ugly, so-called exploitation that we call love out of envy. So when we embrace instead the ideal of this pure devotional service, which was exemplified best of all by these wonderful, wonderful gopis in so many different flavors. Each of them has a different appearance, which is non-different from her attitude, which is non-different from her form. And we merely have to latch on to one of them and follow one of them and try to emulate one of them. And by her mercy, we can also gain such love of Godhead as they have, such love which is illustrated in these beautiful poetic verses here. So we'll stop here, but if anybody has any questions or comments, I was just asked to give this class on the spot. Didn't have any time to check the commentaries to anything more authoritative, so I've said only some general things. But if anybody has any comments or any questions, we can discuss those. Yes, please. Yes. Okay. Succinctly stated, the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for which we have the topmost respect, is that the supreme worshipable personality of Godhead is Sri Krishna. His eternal abode is Sri Vrindavan Dham. The mode of worship which was executed by the gopis is the most appreciable and beautiful manifestation of that love of Godhead. It's revealed by the spotless Purana, or the spotless evidence, Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. This is his theology. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshtanayas Taddhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachit Upachana Vrajavadhu Vargina Yakulpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanamamalam Premapumartho Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamalam Tatadaro Napara. Yes. Yeah, for those who didn't hear the question, sometimes we hear that when women put kumkum in their hair, it's to represent that her husband has killed all rival suitors and decorated her hair with their blood. Kshatriya custom. This is an anthropological answer. This notion is not something that maybe we hear it in Srila Prabhupada's books, but it's either way, it doesn't really make any difference, because the fact of the matter is that this thing is going on forever. So just like we talk about Krishna's appearance or Krishna's birth, but actually he has no birth. He's eternal, you see? So in the same way, we can talk about how these customs came into manifestation in this material world. That's generally an anthropological infatuation. The fact of the matter is that this is an eternal reality. It may be revealed, prakata, or withheld, aprakata. That's going on also forever. But the thing is really Sanatan Dharma. Is that okay? Yes, Bhrigupati Prabhu. Well, there's several answers to this question. It's a very, very good question. One thing I can say is that I mentioned already that this thing is prakata and aprakata. It's manifest and it's obscured from time to time. It's always a good idea, at least if you ask Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, what you should do. It's always a good idea to live in the Holy Dham. You're asking a resident of the Holy Dham, so I can't possibly give you a more objective answer than that. But it's a fact that, as we say in Hindi, sabhi lupt ho raha hai aajkal. Everything is becoming not unmanifested. It's not explicit anymore. The Holy Dham is always there. You cannot erase the Holy Dham. You can only efface it. And this we do by erecting 300-foot Durga Devi deities. Not deities, it's actually an amusement park. Or condominiums or whatever. We can cover over the Holy Dham. That's called Praurha Maya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. But the Holy Dham is always there, and you will always get the benefit of that Holy Dham. However, having said that, another thing that I would like to emphasize is that when I was living at Govardhan, I found it a little bit more difficult to live at Govardhan than to live in Vrindavan. Although Govardhan is spiritually a superior place, according to Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamritam, to Vrindavan, but I found it difficult because the spiritual culture was not explicit there as much as it is in Vrindavan. Even still, people in Vrindavan wear tilak. People in Vrindavan, I mean, the worship is very, it's going on everywhere. It's very hard to avoid, you see. It's not like that everywhere in Vrijadham, and it's certainly not like that everywhere in the material world. But that is a prerequisite for access for persons like us who are conditioned souls. Look at it this way. Srila Prabhupada, we know that the very highest service that someone can do is Sankirtana, distributing books. I was on Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party, and we were moving around the country in vans, the way many of the book distributors still do today. And we were distributing books en masse, large numbers of books. There's no doubt that that is the supreme thing. But after some time, your consciousness becomes funky because you're a conditioned soul. You need the regulation of temple life. You need to see the deities again. You need to taste prasadam. We need these things, you see? And it's not just because we're conditioned souls that we need things, but these things, but actually these things are natural. They're inherent. It's a Sanatan culture, as we mentioned already. We have to make it explicit. How does that happen? That happens by following all the vidhis very carefully. Whatever we're supposed to do, whatever's enjoined in Prabhupada's books, we have to follow those things, and we have to set that example, and then others can also become inspired and enlivened by the same thing. And that extends all the way to our socioeconomic and political paradigms as well. It's a queer characteristic of modern psychology that we want to embrace the theology, but we don't want it to apply to social lives. We don't want it to apply to our economic affairs. We don't want it to apply to our political lives, to our agricultural life, biological life, on whatever level. We're all withholding Krishna consciousness from some application that is inherent within it, you see? And that's why we have difficulties. If we make no distinction any longer between the way that we live and what our books write about, then we find that the society becomes purified, it becomes more attractive, we become purified, we become happy, everything becomes naturally beautiful, as we've heard in these verses. There's nothing being presented here except Goloka Vrindavan activity. And that activity has to be explicitly manifest. When one engages in behaviors that do explicitly manifest this paradigm, the eternal paradigm given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's called Shishtachara. Or sadachara, proper activity, proper dress, proper behavior, proper relations in different people. It's an extension of what we call sambandhagyan. And without sambandhagyan, we cannot have offenseless chanting. So it actually is very, very important. So, although the holy dhamma is always accessible to someone who's determined enough, sometimes it's very difficult to see it, and sometimes it's very difficult to access, you see? So that's why that is the principle that has, I think, retained this cultural characteristic of conservatism, following Shishtachar since time immemorial. And I believe personally that this is a large part of why Srila Prabhupada was pushing so much on Varnashram Dharma in his later years especially. He saw this. He saw that his own disciples in particular were having difficulties. And he knew that the way that we could avoid that was not by purifying the individual, but by purifying the society itself. It's a different approach. That's how I see it at least. Is that okay? It's a question. Your question can be answered on many levels, but I've tried to touch